listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. This is the podcast with the tastiest web development treats. Today, we are going to talk about building a desktop app. Specifically, we have Etienne LeMay here from Missive, which is an email client that Scott and I both use. We'll talk about what it is in just a second, but he's here to talk to us about how to build actually everything in JavaScript, the iOS app, the desktop app, Android app, you name it. So today's episode is sponsored by two awesome companies. The first one is LogRocket, which is LogRocket is going to give you playback into bugs that possibly happen on your website, as well as a whole bunch of insights into what happened, as well as FreshBooks, which is cloud accounting and invoicing and expenses and all that good stuff. So welcome, Etienne. Thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate you taking some time away from building your app and coming on. Do you want to give us like a quick little rundown of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so I'm primarily a front-end developer, although I can do a little bit of full stack, but I'm at Missive, I do the front-end. So Missive is a full-fledged email client. So with all the modern tools you would expect from your email client nowadays. So we're talking snooze, send later, undo send, canned responses and contacts. And we even have rules. So what we call rules is the equivalent of, let's say, Gmail's filters. So you can apply, automate whatever workflow you have. Mm-hmm. So that's the email client part of Missive. But in Missive, we bring collaborative tools and features right to you, right in your inbox. So that was the idea behind Missive. So you can share conversations with your colleagues, or you can even delegate a full email account so that you don't have to share your password, or it's easier to know who did what, especially if you're sending on behalf of a company or you're sending on behalf of someone else. That's something you like to know. Mm-hmm. So in terms of collaborative features, what the difference is we brought in chat. So basically your email conversation can become like a chat room, and then you can have tasks, assignment, and real-time collaborative composing, shell labels, teams, etc.
Yeah, everything. So to give you some insight, I started using Missive probably 2 years ago, where I had brought on an assistant and I said, like, I need something to be able to work with my assistant on emails and things like that. So I ended up on Missive. First, it's a Canadian product, how to support the home team. Second, it was very clearly the best one out there. And the way that it works is that I have my personal email box, I've got my work email address, and then I have a support email address, and I have all three of those funneling in. And then what happens is the support one immediately goes through my assistant, and she will try to reply to as many of those as she can. And if there's a question, we can chat back and forth in line about the email. So like you can see like the person's response, we can go back and forth on a couple little chats, then somebody can send an email as anybody, and then you can close it, you can assign it to people, and it's just like the best workflow for just kind of like boom, 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 like trying to assign emails to people and handle it. And there's a chat room in there. And like, I think it would be like great for like people that are trying to do support, or people that have like, if you have like a shared inbox, if you know if somebody's replied from one or not, it's just an awesome tool. I know I've been using it for a while. Scott, you picked it up how long ago?
Yeah, so maybe about 3 months ago, 4 months ago, I had been doing sort of a trial of several different email clients. I used Nihilus and one, I believe it's called. I don't know. They changed it a whole bunch over the course. I've used Spark considerably. And I was just looking for something that had these features where team accounts, these kind of features were all very important for me for being able to track again, who's answering what and where they're coming in. So I've been looking in personally into getting a virtual assistant to handle at least my support emails, or at least to help with the support.
Yeah.
The common things that I do every single day. And so Because of that, it's like, okay, now I have to improve my workflow. I have to get at this. And one of my requirements that didn't seem to be a requirement of a ton of other people was that it needed to have an Android app, because I use Android primarily. And so many of these like email platforms are like the world's best email platform. And then it's like, oh, iOS only. Okay, great.
Yeah.
And then there are lame excuses. Well, we just want to focus on the best experience for the small. No, like you can focus on, you know, supporting the other 60% of mobile users out there. So I'm a big fan of this app for that reason. And I know you had talked it up, and I personally did. I don't know why I didn't bite initially. And now that I did, I'm feeling like a total dummy for not biting 2 years ago or whatever when you first told me about it. So I've been a big fan and a daily user of it for the past, you know, 3-4 months.
Yeah. So it's obviously an awesome app. We love it. This is not sponsored or anything, even though we both use it.
Yeah, I don't want to gush too much here. It's a great app.
But the reason we're having them on is because the desktop app, the Android app, the iOS app, it works in the browser. All of that is built in JavaScript. So you want to start with maybe just the desktop app? What is it built in? You want to explain about that?
Yes, of course. So it's the basis is a good old React app. And we started building like in January 2014. Hmm. So I just had a look, and the first React we had was 0.8.
Wow.
So we're talking like the 2013 version. So I had a quick look too, and the first commit of Redux, for example, was in 2015. So that was a year after we had already started Missive. So in that regards, we didn't know what Redux was, or even at the time, I mean, bundlers were not much of a thing either. So the rest is maybe something we could consider nowadays a little bit of a legacy for the tools we use, but we haven't had a reason to change that yet. It's working quite well, and you don't want to break something, especially with this big of a code base.
Yeah.
So the rest is a backbone for the models, collections, router, events. So backbone with underscore. Mm-hmm. It's built with CoffeeScript.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. So at the time it was the only way to create classes and instances.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't pretty doing that in JavaScript. And that's something we knew we wanted to have a good base. So we built that with CoffeeScript, and the rest is just libraries and helpers, but it's basically that.
So you use React with Backbone. How does that work? Do you just use React for like for templating and the virtual DOM stuff, and then Backbone for the rest of it?
Yeah, pretty much. So Backbone is like our Redux.
Yep.
We use it for the events. So mostly everything is event-based. So you just trigger an event with your backbone, and you know the good components are listening to that event. And we use it for the router too, which at the time, even React router, I don't think was a thing. And also for the models and collections, which is the biggest reason we've been using Backbone.
Oh, that's really neat. And have you looked over at TypeScript, sort of like that meme, looking over at it? Or is that just like, you've probably got, there's only three people, you hired a fourth behind yeah. this massive app. So I'm sure that you've got enough on your plate, but have you even ever thought about the benefits of something like a TypeScript?
We have not considered it yet for the same reason. It's just a big code base that it would take a lot of effort and time to do something to use a TypeScript or change, or ideally maybe it would be more like in modern JavaScript. So instead of CoffeeScript, because for all the other tools that we could use, but that's at the end, you realize that it's not what makes a good app.
Yeah.
So you can still profile a JavaScript. You can still profile your events. You can profile your React nonetheless. So that's, to us, it's not been like a reason yet to change that.
Wild. So the React part of the code base, did you use any libraries in particular to get yourself like there? I know the desktop app, is it Electron? I feel like it most likely is. Yeah. And so for the front end, you used React App or Next or any of that stuff?
No. It was still so new at the time. So I want to say we didn't know about Create React App, or so we just started with a bare bone React, and we just created a few routes and came up with a structure that was working well and components and some intertwined with the backbone models. You can register to the events. We did add the React backbone library at the time, which was something that helped glued backbone and React together.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty seamless for us to implement.
And what about like tooling? How do you dev on this thing? Like, what do you run on your computer to dev on it? And then also, like, what's the process for bundling this thing up into an app and eventually into Electron?
Yeah, we've changed along the line, but it's just Webpack. So we started a Webpack server, which compiles everything into a single JavaScript file. It is not so much optimized. That is something that we would like to improve and work on. But other than that, I run a single process in terms of building the client part, the front end part, so that it's just a single process, which is the Webpack config. And then that's literally bytes for bytes, the same JavaScript file that is in Electron or Cordova for the mobile apps, and the same one that we use for the web browsers.
Mm. So what kind of state management do you have going on? So you said it's all sort of event-based.
Backbone models, right?
Right. So on the React end of things, I guess, are you using anything to manage state locally for React, or are you just essentially running pretty much with the backbone as sort of the catalyst for everything?
Yeah, we do have one state object that is, in fact, a backbone model.
Yeah.
But because it provides with the events we need, you can listen to just specific events. So you can have a component that will listen, let's say, for the event state, just online, offline. If we know a user goes online and offline, we trigger an event and we just update the state, and the state will trigger the event, and the components that required to know about the online state, they can just, if it's a UI component, it can be re-rendered with React events. And
that's so neat that you can do that all in React, because if I think about an email app that I use, there's so much fussy stuff. Yeah. And I bet like most of your dev time is spent on very small little bugs, because like an email client has tons of shortcuts and tons of little things and different context switching, and when you press arrow keys, different things happen and different checkboxes. And like the reason why I wanted to have you on is because like I spend probably most of my day between VS Code, which is Electron app, and Missive. I spend at least a couple hours a day in my Missive app, or at least maybe half an hour doing email every day. And I was like, the fact that this thing is so nice and polished and done entirely in JavaScript is pretty amazing. Like, is it challenging to do a lot of these like UI things in JavaScript, or is that a benefit to doing it in JavaScript?
Well, it's a little bit of both. It can be considered a side effect of having only JavaScript applications. For example, the worst thing to do in JavaScript or do yourself are everything related to swipe. So all gestures that comes for free normally in a native application, or if you use Apple SDK or even Android, you get those for free. And we are used to the iPhone gestures. We know how they work. They are smooth. They respond in whatever app you use, they will always respond the same way. So that's something you expect from the apps you use. So having to build that in JavaScript, I would say that's been the most challenging part. It's the UX around all these little things that you expect to be in an app, while everything that is UI and that you would get, like the picker, a select, a context menus, and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, once you nail them, they're here for long. You can just reuse them, or you can have a higher order component that you can reuse. And those I wouldn't consider the most challenging part, but definitely the UX and the gestures and the all the stuff around the.
So Missive has a fairly unique gesture as far as what I've seen. This could be different for Apple users, where if you start swiping on one email and then you hold down or swipe down, you can dismiss or archive like as many emails as you can in one fell swoop. I'm really interested in that interaction. Was that like, what was the catalyst for that, coming up with that interaction? And when you made it, were you instantly like, this is super duper handy? Because that's something that I use 24/7 in Missive. And I found myself just absolutely loving that.
Yeah, yeah. We've always said that we were the first and only ones to do what we call the multi-conversation swipe. Mm-hmm. I don't exactly remember how we had the idea. Maybe it was because we had to find a way to act on multiple conversations at the same time. And, you know, the pattern of select and then you just tap the conversation you want. I don't know. I guess it wasn't fast enough or wasn't productive enough. And once we had the idea and once we did it, there was no going back for us. It's something that we've been pushing a lot. And when we demo Missive, and that's something we're a gesture we're really proud of, the UX around the multi-conversation swipe.
Yeah, I love that UI myself. And it's funny because I see myself using it. I'm like, oh, that's really nice. But then I'm curious about like, but how did they build it? You know, like, yeah. I always want to know like what's behind it and whatnot.
Yeah, you mean the technicalities or the challenges?
No, I just as a user, I think it's just interesting from a developer standpoint and whatnot.
Yeah,
I would actually be interested in hearing just a little bit of the technical behind it.
Yeah,
when you're swiping, you start to swipe like the handle, the event, and then what are you triggering the event on? Is it the drag of the email specifically?
No, yeah, exactly. That's a good point, because you work with the DOM, you know how you want to limit your reads and your writes. So actually you just swipe on your screen, and with the X and Y coordinates, we can map that to the conversations that we know are there. We just don't query the DOM at all. You just move points, and then we use the CSS to move with JavaScript that move the transform tree of each elements that are detected to be within the swipe range.
Cool. I mean, it looks and feels super smooth. So I think that would be like the challenge of it. That sounds like, I don't know, that's a super interesting approach. When you have problems like that are sort of atypical, it's always sort of like, okay, I'm going to start this as just a drag and whatever on this thing. And then, oh no, wait, we have to support everything. So then you have to move on to, well, how can I... It's almost like you're selecting something. I find that solution pretty darn interesting.
Yeah. In my JavaScript 30 course, one of the exercises is to just click a checkbox, hold down shift, and click a lower checkbox, and to select everything in between.
Oh, yeah.
And for it to work the opposite way, select a lower checkbox and do a higher one. And the logic in that very simple example, it was like 40 lines, 40, 50 lines of JavaScript. And it's fairly complex. I can't imagine like implementing it like for real life with like all these swipes and everything.
Oh, it is a lot of lines. and then you mix in a request animation frame, a lot of techniques to have like a 60 FPS animation and transitions. Once I found a way to improve on very old devices, because back then we had to test like just the iPhone 4. I don't know if you remember the iPhone 4.
Oh, yeah.
But as much as they were very nice devices, that's the kind of transition that would kill your phone. It wouldn't work. And then Android, it wasn't much more smoother than iOS. So you have to find ways around that. And in our case, we had to have two levels of transform 3D. So one level for the horizontal a swipe and another for the vertical. So it was a very complex and back and forth trial and error. But yeah, just there are no secrets besides don't read and write the DOM too often. So you want to cache every, if you, you know your elements are in certain position, you want to cache that position. You don't want to query the DOM to know where conversation B is. You really want to work with data and not the DOM itself.
Yeah, I think we'll get into a lot of this more after we talk about one of our sponsors. But I think that leads me to like maybe the next section we can get into, which will be like the mobile app space of it, because that's such a pretty big part of this. And the app doesn't feel like a JavaScript app. So real quick, I think we're going to talk about one of our sponsors, which is LogRocket. Now, if you have users using your app and maybe they're swiping and the thing in their email app does not do what they're supposed to. So LogRocket is one of these really cool softwares that, well, it allows you to see exactly what's happening. It typically, when we're solving bugs, we're doing so almost in like a cave without a flashlight on. You got like a call stack maybe, which is like your phone's flashlight, but maybe you want that big old flashlight to see everything. I know Wes wants big flashlight to see everything. And so what you have with LogRocket is your entire bug system illuminated. You can see exactly what the user did with a session replay video. You can get access to the network tab, error logs, Redux store, all that awesome stuff. I am a huge, huge fan of LogRocket. So check it out at logrocket.com/syntax and you will get 14 days for free. So check it out. And thank you to LogRocket for sponsoring. So let's get into talking about this mobile app, because the mobile app is great. And, you know, it's funny that we talked just about the animations and some of the techniques that you needed to use to remove jank from the animations. And so many times that when you're using native apps that aren't native apps, they have those issues where specifically with things like dragging events. I know I personally have built like Cordova apps and things like that to get those dragging events. And I could never get the animation feeling like a true native app. And I never felt like Missive felt slow in those ways. It feels very smooth.
I didn't even know. I asked him before he came on. I was like, is the app built in JavaScript too? Or is that's native? And he's like, no, it's JavaScript too. I was like, what? I didn't even know. Like, there's no way you can tell that it's built in JavaScript. And I agree. Like, those JavaScript apps have that feeling, you know?
It's just a feeling. It's a slight bit of jank or FPS loss that you do notice. And I don't notice it with Missive. So I would love to get into quite a bit about the mobile app. I'm sure we have a billion questions about it. But first and foremost, maybe can you give us a little bit of high level? What's it built in? Is it, you know, same code base? What that kind of stuff? Are you sharing components? I'm very fascinated by this.
Yes. And that's actually a part that we're quite proud and not ashamed. And I'm saying that because it is a Cordova app, first of all.
Cool.
So it is bytes for bytes, the same app that you get on your desktop.
Really?
Yeah, I swear.
It's super impressive.
So it's like the same bundle shipped out?
It's media queries.
No way.
And CSS. If you resize your desktop app down to a mobile, you almost get the same experience. But with the exception of, we know you're not on a touch device, but the animations, everything, you can even swipe on desktop if you hold down the shift,
yep.
The shift key. So yeah, back to mobile, but it is this exactly the same app. So it's same technicality, same challenges, same.
Wow.
That's what allows us to be fast and to be able to provide such a big app with a lot of features, only as a team of three. And, to deploy on all the platforms and at once.
Wow. So you say it's built on Cordova, which is like what PhoneGap used to be. I've been sort of out of the game in these types of things. What does Cordova give you in order to run an app on iOS or Android?
So it's a little bit similar to Electron. So it gives you a web view. So in our case, it's WebKit. So that's at least you can, you know, you're working with the same browser. And then it has an ecosystem of plugins. So then you can add all the native, the functionalities you need. So if you want to control a few things about the keyboard, we have a plugin for using the photos and the images, uploads, downloads, and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's pretty cool. It's always interesting to see. So That differs from something like React Native, where I just say this for our listeners, I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
That differs from React Native, where in React Native, your UI is done natively in iOS or Android, and all of your logic and everything happens in the background in JavaScript. Whereas this is, your UI is HTML and CSS, and you run JavaScript right on it, which is pretty cool that you get such a smooth experience. I'm still, I know you said this like 2 minutes ago, but I'm just resizing my email app right now. I'm still amazed that you can, I just resized my app and it's the mobile app on the desktop.
I think for anybody who's ever built it, even like a mobile, not even like a mobile app, but a mobile view of an application and had to do a lot of this stuff, whether it's gestures or animations, you'll know that it's not always super easy to get it feeling like a native app. And I'm really impressed that Missive's using Cordova. What's your experience been with something like Cordova? Because I have used it, but I haven't done it for anything larger than this. Do you feel like using Cordova has been a large positive for this app? Do you feel like it's holding you back in any sort of way? Do you wish it was on different platforms, or are you totally satisfied with it?
I think it's very positive for us. It's been working well, but to be fair, we have a lot of internal toolings to make Cordova act exactly like we'd want it to work. There was a lot of times where, for example, you would want a plugin. It was the web view is a plugin too on Cordova. So you want your web view, but on Android, if you included the plugin, the Android app was just crashing. And if the plugin wasn't included in iOS, iOS would be crashing. You're in a state where, fine, I just want it in iOS or vice versa. But you can't do that with Cordova. So we kind of have to build our own structure around Cordova and that allows us to have plugin in only one platform while we don't have it in another platform. And then we rely on Fastlane. I don't know if you know about Fastlane.
I don't know.
No.
That manages all the building part and the deployment on iOS and TestFlight and Google Play Store.
Oh, okay.
So that's a tool that's been, I think it's been bought by Google. It used to be an open, it is still open source. So.
Ooh, app automation done right. And they have a little counter of how many developer hours they've saved, which is kind of, it's like a, you know, people served, but hours saved. We have, you know, 19 million hours saved. It's pretty cool.
This is at fastlane.tools, if anyone's trying to look it up as we're talking.
Yeah, so at some point we just switched to Fastlane for the compiling and building and releasing to the respective app stores.
Oh, and you've never had any trouble with Apple or anything like that for... I know that a long time ago it used to be they didn't like using JavaScript apps, but now it's fine?
Yeah, no. And I don't even know if they are aware. They must be, but we've been featured on the apps we love and, you know, little stories here and there on the App Store a few times already. I think both on Apple Canada and Apple US.
Wow.
To our knowledge, at least. So, yeah, and it's recurring. Every 2 or 3 months, we will see a Missive icon in one of these categories. So, so as far as we can tell, they don't have a problem with that, your app being a JavaScript, but you do have to play by the rules, and we don't inject everything is bundled in the app.
Okay.
We don't download assets afterwards, or we always go through the app store.
That's good.
Yeah. And no, we, besides a few guidelines here and there, they will change the few things you have to update for the billing and stuff like that. But
because the thing about a JavaScript app is if you want to update the app, you can sort of just go to the internet and download the entire JS file.
Yeah.
But that's not allowed. You have to go through the update process that Apple approves you, right?
Yeah. And that's what we heard. And we haven't even tried. That's something we'd like to do for the desktop app to come up with the service worker and download the assets. Just the assets and not Electron itself. But I don't think that's something that you want to try with Apple. You do. So I think we'll it will keep on waiting 24 hours before being approved and just continue that way.
Yeah, you don't want to get the ban.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but that's pretty impressive that you know you're doing something right when you have a JavaScript app that can be featured in those apps, because it means that, you know, it is a Apple approved experience, which of course they definitely value very highly. So this is darn interesting. I was sort of expecting the app to be maybe not Cordova. So this is like changing a lot of my mindset on this whole thing. So the app number feels like it's an email client, right? We all know email clients have like a ton of state where these things are downloading emails. They're, you know, grabbing emails when you open it. It has to feel smooth. It has to have notifications. It maybe has to fetch them in the background. Like it should fetch them in the background. I never feel like this app is waiting. Like I never feel like I'm waiting for this app to load. What's the message that you've, or what's the techniques and strategy you've done for dealing with those kinds of data, whether that's offline, online, low network stuff, notifications, like how background tasks, how do you manage to do all those so well with a JavaScript app?
Yeah, that's interesting, because actually we don't have any background fetching whatsoever.
Interesting.
Besides, of course, the API, our API, our server does all the heavy lifting of, I mean, getting the emails into our servers and parsing and doing whatever a server needs to do to render, then to just provide an email that's usable.
Sure.
But as far as the client is concerned, we just prioritize fetching the right emails, and because that's the thing, when you first you open Missive, you see a list of conversations. So we want that to be as fast as possible. So the server never includes any data of the message itself. It doesn't have the body of your email. That is hosted on the S3, so on Amazon S3. So the HTML required to render the email, we fetch, once the conversation has been rendered, we know we can fetch the latest message, which is the most likely one to be read first. And then in the background, all the other messages are fetched while you read, for example, the last message. And it's just, so far it's been working pretty well, because we rely on what the browser does best, which is making requests. So we just fetch the content, and then we do persist it in IndexedDB. So all the other times we don't query the server. We use the local version we have, which is stored in IndexedDB.
Okay, and IndexedDB for our listeners is a sort of like the grown up local storage that's built into the browser, right?
It's a little bit similar. But it's async, so it's not sync like the local yep. storage, and you can do you can query it a little bit. It's transaction based for those who knows a little bit more about databases. So you can just have a cursor and iterate over items. So you can do a little bit of queries to that database in JavaScript.
That's cool. I've actually never run into somebody who uses IndexedDB. I always look at it. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's pretty neat. I wish I could use that. That's pretty cool.
You should build an email client.
Yeah. That sounds hard. I don't want to do it.
It does sound hard. There's sometimes I think about projects like, oh, I have this project that, you know, there's no good solutions for me. I'll just build it. And like an email client is one that I would look at for maybe half of a second and just be like, no, I don't want to.
Let's take another quick break for one of our sponsors, and then we'll get back into it. There's a whole bunch of stuff I want to talk about here. And their next sponsor today is FreshBooks. FreshBooks does your cloud accounting, keeps track of your invoices, keeps track of your expenses. You can do your time tracking on there. You can do automated follow-ups if people haven't paid you. All of that good stuff. It makes billing painless for small businesses. I use it myself. I have for probably 10 years now. I'm in it probably at least a couple times a week. It's great. Check it out at freshbooks.com Syntax for a 30-day unrestricted free trial. Don't forget to use Syntax when they ask you, how did you hear about us? Thanks so much to FreshBooks for sponsoring. Let's talk about testing. Just also, like, obviously you can test it like in the browser and whatnot, but like how do you make sure that it works on all of these devices? Do you do that by hand? Do you have any like test suites or automation or anything built in there?
Yeah, we do have I would consider it a small test suite for, you know, everything that is units based. So the units test, that's mostly tested. But as far as integration tests that we can call them, or tests that, you know, that will make sure that your React component act accordingly, or mm-hmm. whether if you're on a mobile device, we don't have exactly any tests of that sort yet.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering, like, how would you even test that swipe one that we talked about?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Seriously.
Well, you have to buy an Android and you have to buy an iPhone. You have to. So yeah, we do a lot of tests, manual tests, and then they are ups and downs, and you have to just be aware of what you're releasing, what's new. Code review. We do a lot of code review between us. And then a lot of testing. We have a little staging environment for us that we are barely a week in advance of our stable releases, which are almost weekly anyway. So we're not much in advance. So yeah, sometimes a few bugs hit the production here and there, but we try to be as fast as possible to fix them, or in regards to, especially with the App Store review and everything, you know, you can add some times before fixing the actual bug. But yeah, we try to be careful.
So have you at all looked into anything like Cypress, which is, for those of you who don't know, is an end-to-end testing library that gives you these visual things? The reason why a lot of times people won't use Cypress is because it's only Chrome. But since your app is Chrome, Electron, Chrome, I don't know, obviously don't know what the iOS Cordova web view is, but it seems like Cypress would be right up your alley for at least doing like quick step through testing. We use it ourselves quite a lot, and it's been very nice. It's sort of like a jQuery interface for interacting with your application.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I don't even think I knew what Cypress was. So that's, I would definitely note that.
Yeah, you should check it out, because it's not testing in the same way that normal testing platforms are, where you have to worry too much about, you know, if you're using React testing library, whatever, you're having to actually deal with the platform. Cypress, it's more like load up this URL, click through it, make sure things work. We even just have a Cypress test that's just called site tour. That's just the user clicking to go to every single individual page, just so I can make sure that I didn't goof up, you know, something that would have caused a page to not load the correct data at some point. So check it out. Cypress is one of those tools that I really like myself and rely on. So,
yeah, no, that's interesting. But we do have a CI that runs for the client part, which is using Puppeteer.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which is the headless Chrome, Chromium.
Yep.
We are set up to be a little bit more deep with the React testing and everything. But for example, most of the, let's say we have some, you add a label, which is, well, the assigned label. If you move a conversation to assign to me, in Missive assigns, it has to add yourself as an assignee. It has to remove the conversation from being in the state where it's considered closed or opened. So it has a lot of automatic actions because you applied the label assigned to me. And that is something that we can test, because that's the unit part. The only thing we cannot test yet is knowing whether the right components will show that, you know, you have been assigned for real. And
gotcha. Yeah.
So that's, sure. That's the lacking part. We have like a 50% of what we need to test that.
Oh, yeah. I think the last thing I want to ask about here is the styling of the UI. It's a, like, what are you using there? It's a pretty, like, stripped down UI. But like, I'm curious into like, how do you, you obviously use CSS, any specific frameworks? Also, do you use Flexbox, Grid, things like that?
I'm a huge Flexbox fan. I don't think there's anything Flexbox cannot do.
Yeah.
I don't consider I've been using Flexbox for quite a few years, so I don't consider the API to be, sometimes it's easy to get lost into the justify and the alignment and everything. So yeah, we use Flexbox for everything. It's SaaS mostly, with just for a little bit of nothing too fancy. No mix-ins. No, it's almost only CSS. And what I like to do is build a CSS API of sorts. So if you want to add a margin, you have a class for that margin, which is, for example, margin left. We don't write as much CSS anymore. Once you have a good base, you can just apply these and consider the CSS as a language of sort, like you could use a...
Yeah, I've often heard of that referred to as a utility-based CSS, or somebody's trying to call it functional CSS at some point. I don't know. Yeah. that's a very, not just common approach, but I think it's an approach that a certain group of developer really, really likes, because we hear that all the time with Tailwinds. That's largely how they do it, is like these micro classes that handle their use cases, and you apply a bunch of classes to handle those use cases. I'm absolutely fascinated by that approach, and a ton of people seem to really, really love it. So that's great that it's working out for you, especially because, like you said, you don't end up having to write a lot of CSS that way. You're just applying the classes for a system that already determines how this whole thing should look. It's the styling. So it's pretty cool. You're using, like you said, SAS, not using a ton of crazy stuff. And again, that's just all being done through your build tool. So that seems pretty straightforward to me.
Very old school, very old school. It shows how long ago we started, and we just kept using the same tools. And that's also an advantage of being a small team. Every single decision you make toward your stack, you really have to ask yourself if it's worth it, if it's something you will end up just rewriting over and over, or if that's something you can build on, and if it's easy to use for everyone in the team, and easy to integrate someone new, and you have less options a little bit, if I may say.
I think this has a very good message behind it, because I think I even like messaged something on Twitter or something about Svelte, about how I like Svelte, and somebody responded to me with like, oh my gosh, what is this other thing we have to learn now? It's like, well, you don't have to learn it. Like, this goes to show you, not that these technologies are old, but you're using Backbone in a Cordova app that feels like a native app on all platforms. So it's really not the latest and greatest tool that matters. It's the tool that your team knows how to use effectively. And it seems like you guys have really locked down these tools effectively. So I want to stress that, because I don't, like, just because something new comes out doesn't mean you have to learn it, or you have to do it, or whatever. I mean, you guys are using just amazing tech to do this, and it feels like a great experience.
Yeah, it just like, and like, I think the quickness of how quickly you can roll out a change, like, I think, like, a couple times I've emailed you and say like, hey, is it possible to do this? And then like 3 hours later, you're like, update, you can now. And it's like, oh man, like, I think it was just like different font sizes what I wanted. And you had rolled that out in like, I don't know, a couple hours or something like that. It was amazing. I was like, oh, that's like such a huge benefit of like the web stack and keeping things lean, is that you can move a lot more quickly with that type of thing.
Yeah, and whether or not you got the West Bus treatment, that's between us, right? I can hardly be more biased, but we do, even just with the three of us, we care a great deal about support. And that's something we're really proud of. And we follow up every single request. We personally follow up with everyone who requested a feature. That's something that's very important to us. And yeah, that's the care we put every single day into building Missive.
That's amazing. Well, it's appreciated because Scott and I just love gushing about it. And we're not paid or anything to do that.
Yeah, this isn't an ad. This, you know, like a lot of podcasts, they like to do that, like the promotional tour or something, or somebody just released a book. And like, this is not a promotional tour. We just thought this was absolutely fascinating.
You should see how many people want to come on this podcast to plug their product.
Oh, really?
You should see how many people want their boss or their coworker. My coworker, my boss is the perfect guest for your podcast. And they also just released a new book. Oh,
that doesn't work. We won't have you on if you have something cool to sell, but we will have you on if you have actually built something nifty.
That's very nice, because that's actually our only channel of marketing. We don't do any marketing. We don't do any ads. Word of mouth, as always, and it still be our only channel. So we know you guys gave us a few shout outs in the past, so that's extremely appreciated.
Oh, absolutely. Is there anything else that is interesting about the technology stack that you think listeners would like to hear about?
Well, we could move on to a different topic. We could talk about the back end. We could talk about the servers, the microservices we have. We would be here for a few hours.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I mean, in terms of front end, as far as the client is concerned, the application, whether it's an email client or not, it's not fully aware of that. It's just a matter of sending and receiving requests and making sure everything is up to date. So that's the challenge to deal with. And first, yes, an email app, and then you have chats in real time, and you can archive from Gmail, you can archive from Outlook, you can archive from Missive. So there are a lot of sources, a lot of places the data can be updated, and that's something for the backend guys to have fun with.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a fun job. Doing all of like email and calendaring have been around forever, and trying to innovate on something that is a standard, like SMTP, or I don't think anyone uses POP anymore, but like,
no, we don't. No.
Those are like standards, right? And then, but then you have like Gmail adding stuff on top, like snoozing, and like that's not part of the standard. And having to deal with that, I can imagine that's a tough thing to do.
And both Gmail and you have Outlook, they are both moving away from IMAP, which so you have to connect to their own API. So now you cannot consider those standards anymore. They have their own proprietary API. So that's not something that we are supporting right now. But yeah, that's going to be something we will need to address at some point.
Interesting. Well, that was super helpful. I'm sure we could talk another hour about it, but I want to respect your time. I think I just love these kinds of interviews because it's just us super curious about how is it built, and we get to use our podcast as a way to get into people's minds.
I know. It reminds me of the one we did with Drew about the Danger Crew game, because it's so inspirational to see, as somebody who develops things with, primarily websites and applications, it's amazing to see something like an email client, which is an application you've been using since you probably started using a computer. And it's interesting to see that kind of thing done so well with our technologies. Mm-hmm. And so that's absolutely fascinating to me. It's totally inspiring. And if you download, use Missive, you'll be pretty darn blown away about, I don't know, just the impressiveness of the whole project. I'm just absolutely fascinated by this. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing everything.
Oh, thanks you for having me.
Absolutely. Let's move into some sick picks. This is the section of the show where we pick things that are sick. I've got another. I've been on a bit of a roll with tools lately.
I know what you're going to sick pick, and I knew what it was before we even started the show. I'm pretty excited about this because I'm going to have to be using your referral link here.
A couple people even like DM me on Instagram were like, hey, sick pic in the making.
I know.
Anyway, so what I'm sick picking is the Wagner Flexio. It's a paint spray gun, which is it's basically like a plug-in gun. They call it an airless gun. And it's got this huge wind turbine on the back. And then you can screw on a nozzle with a big thing of like paint, like just like latex paint or oil paint or whatever it is. And we had bought this thing for our kitchen, which is like a kitchen island off of Kijiji. Like it was used and it was the wrong color. So we took one of our doors into the store and got it color matched and got this like melamine paint. And I put it in the gun. I had to thin it out a little so it would spray nicely. And this thing is awesome. It's like having like spray paint, but for any color that you could possibly want, and so much cheaper than spray paint. So it was a little bit of investment, $200 Canadian. But I am kicking myself. The amount of painting I've done as a homeowner, I hate painting. It's the worst. And this just turned out so nicely. So check it out. I got the $590. I can't find it on Amazon, but I at my local... Etienne, you're Canadian, you'll know. Canadian Tire is where I got it.
We had those in Michigan, so I'm aware of those.
Wait, you have Canadian Tire in Michigan?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we don't have them here in Colorado, but we had them in Michigan.
Really? Yeah. Oh, man, it's an odd store.
I know the logo very well, yeah.
Yeah, you probably see it on like hockey games and stuff like that.
Or maybe they're not in Michigan. Maybe they're just in Ontario right across the Windsor there. Oh, I just Googled it and it looks like they're only in Windsor. I guess that's, sorry, I misspoke.
Yeah, I'm looking at it too. All right, well, okay, that would have been amazing because I know there's Tim Hortons.
It's close enough. We spend enough time in Windsor. Yeah, we got T-Horts, yeah.
Yeah, you got T-Horts. So check it out, Wagner Flexio 590. I got one that came with two tips, one like spray detail gun and then one... like a regular gun, I guess. I don't know. Go check it out at your whatever Maynards or whatever that you shop at. What do people in the UK shop at? Homebase. Go check it out at Homebase or Wikis. I know I talked to you, Dan, about this before.
Yes.
You said you didn't. Did you think of anything or do you want to skip it?
Well, yeah, no, I do have one, but I feel not lame, but we've talked about our stack, you know, our... a little bit outdated I can be. But especially because I can use it with Missive because we are with CoffeeScript. But in other side projects or other microservices we build for Missive, I use Prettier quite a lot.
Mm, yeah.
And that's been a time saver for me. So yeah, that's the only thing I could think of.
Wait. Does Prettier work with CoffeeScript?
I don't think so. I've been trying to find ways, but there's like maybe one fork on GitHub, but I don't know the status of the thing.
I'm a big fan of Prettier myself. Check it out, prettier.io, auto code formatter. Scott, do you have a sick pick?
My sick pick today is going to be another podcast, and I found this one to be super fascinating if you're into... if you're into the music industry at all, I've always been, you know, big fan of, you know, just in general. I don't know. My first concert was when I was in like elementary school. I've been a big fan of listening to music for a long time. This podcast is called Disgraceland. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, Wes. It's got like Elvis as a mummy as the logo or a zombie. And so no. Disgraceland is sort of true. You don't want to call them true crime, but they're true crime-esque sort of stories because they're not necessarily crime-related. They're just events about different sort of disgraceful events in music history or even just general, like, really rough events. So some of them, like Amy Winehouse, Rehab, The Muse, and The Rare Talent, Johnny Cash, Pills, More Pills, and Playing with Fire. But they're just sort of these really... kind of dark stories about things that have happened in music history. And I found them to be absolutely fascinating. So many of the stories, because the ones I just said don't really sound like, they sound kind of mainstreamy, but so many stories that I've listened to have been things that I never had any idea that they happened. Things about like famous musicians that you've heard of that you didn't maybe know of the backstories behind, or just situations they got into that are super sketchy. And so I found this podcast to be absolutely fascinating for nothing less of these stories of people and musicians that you've heard about for a long time, but never heard of any of these stories. So check it out. It's Disgraceland. It's by one of the bigger podcast people. Who is it by? It is by iHeartRadio, and it's just really good. High production quality, done really well. So big fan of that one if you're a music fan.
Cool. We'll move into some shameless plugs. Plug all of my courses at westboss.com/courses. Etienne, do you have anything you'd like to shamelessly plug?
Let me see. Yes, of course. Missiveapp.com, or you can find Missive on any platform's specific app stores. And you just drop us an email if you have questions or whatever. We're pretty responsive on emails. We know emails. We do emails.
That sounds like a tagline. We know emails. my shameless plug is going to be for my latest course, which is going to be Svelte for Beginners. And it teaches you everything you need to know to get up and running and started with Svelte. It's darn really cool. I've been showing some stuff on Instagram about it because you would not believe how little code you have to write to do some things. It's sort of like they took some ideas from React and Vue and just sort of like at least the coding aspect of things and then just removed all of the fluff, all of the extra little things. You know, I found it to be absolutely just really nice to work in. And there's some really great platforms along with Svelte to do some server-side rendering stuff too. So check it out. You will be amazed at all of the things that we're able to accomplish in this course. We build a quiz in about 2 seconds and it uses an API and it has animations and it has style. It's awesome. So check it out at leveluptutorials.com/pro. Sign up for the year, save 25%. And that's all I got.
Great. Well, thank you so much again for coming on. Appreciate all of your time. Check it out at missiveapp.com. It's an awesome app, even just to like try it out and see like, oh, this is JavaScript behind the scenes and to see what a well-built JavaScript app can look like on mobile and desktop.
Yeah, and just give it 5 stars on every platform while you're at it, too, because they deserve
it. Thank you.
Cool. All right, that's it. We usually end with a piece. You can say, how do you say piece in French?
Hey.
Hey.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.